they would put me up in a motel or hotel, mm-hmm. and would give us pocket money, and we could see the city and so on. But I don't think I will do it. it is
yes, sir.
Too much of a strain. And
sure.
My wife said, I don't want to come back alone.
Exactly.
We may, if we feel all right, mm-hmm. we might go back to Holland next spring. Mm-hmm. But it took too long for them to invite me.
Exactly.
And I don't feel like doing it anymore.
Sure.
Because all the people now, they now, like your generation, they know what happened, and some believe and some don't believe. And what we see today is a lot seems to be forgotten. When you read the newspapers today, how they act and what they do today, it's just incredible.
Well,
so, there are so many things today happening which shouldn't happen. Any more questions?
I have one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
When the war was over and everything, did you find it really hard? Because you kind of really had to reclaim your identity, it seems like to me, because if they stripped you, they took you out of school and they stripped you of everything.
I tell you, I had traveled under a wrong name, wrong nationality, wrong age, and everything. But when I was in South America, in Dutch Guiana, I claimed my name and and I went back to Holland under my identity.
Okay. I didn't know.
This was only during the war I had to do that for my own.
Oh, sure.
Good.
Sure. And I didn't know if it was was like a real long ordeal that you had to.
No, it was easy for me to change my name.
How was it to adjust to this time after being on the road for such a long time? And then such a fear, really.
When I was in Madrid, there was no pressure anymore. And when we came to Jamaica, which was a British colony and the Americans had partly taken over, and then to Dutch Guiana, which was the Dutch colony at that time. So they were all liberated, free countries. So when I came back to Holland, I was free. And the company I had worked with asked me back and gave me my job back. And gave me an advancement. So I was all right. I didn't feel anything about that. But naturally, if you are older, you think about it. And it had its repercussions still today. And I am just few of the people who still live. Because some of my friends who came through, if you get older, it's sinner. So that's my story. I have been interviewed by the Shoah, by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, yes.
And I have a tape of that, and that is similar. When I talk to you, so that's my story. And if anybody thinks it didn't happen, all that they have to do is read the history and read the newspaper all the time.
Exactly.
I mean, you can lie about one thing, but you cannot lie about that all the time.
That was
and this happened over. Look, Hitler came to power in 1932-33. And he killed himself in 1945, and whatever happened during the Second World War, you see on television a lot now, So how those people can say it didn't happen, it's incredible to me. They just have blinds before their eyes. And they, I believe, are more interested in their own thing, see? So that's just too bad. But history wants to be rewritten sometimes, and forgotten.
And it should.
Yeah.
You know, one of my sentences in my paper, which I think was kind of maybe a little too meaningful, was that that I think, in my opinion, anyone that disbelieves has to be incredibly stupid, because how, and my quote was, how could a whole race of people from different areas of Europe, from different livelihoods, you know, your father was a lawyer, and then there were people who were, you know, peasants even. Yeah. How could they all, every single one of them, say the same exact thing? You know, basically, you know, Hitler came in, he stripped us of our livelihood, he stripped us of our lives, he took our family. That, to me, in itself, if anyone could sit there, they are choosing to believe his propaganda, and it still exists. Mm-hmm. Sadly, there are people in this world, and I have had the displeasure of meeting one person, and he was my age, and he called himself a skinhead, is what he called himself, and I had the displeasure of being behind this person in line. Well, at first, I was in front of him, and he decided to break in front of me, and I knew what he was, and I'm the type of person that, to begin with, he did an injustice to me from breaking from me. Mm-hmm. But for him to stand there and approve of an inhuman person that could totally be that way, I couldn't not say anything. So I said, you know, you can sit there and you can wear your shirt and you can preach what you want to preach to your little friends, but for right now, you're going to let me in front of you. And if you don't like that, then you and I can have our own little discussion.
No.
And he was so shocked at the fact, I guess maybe my size, and I terrified my boyfriend. And he said, by all means, go right ahead. And, you know, to me, I had, at that particular time, it's right when Steven Spielberg's movie came out, and I can't watch it. You know? I can't get through the whole movie, and I thought, well, you know, there's nothing I can say to that person to make him see, but the least I could do is just put a stick inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought, you know, my paper will never be published or anything like that, but I will know that within myself, maybe my children will read it one day. Or, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
And people will know how I felt and know that I believed it happened, and that I think that these people, you know, it's their choice. And I think it's a sad, very naive choice to make.
Sad history. And, you know, history will repeat itself. You see that what happened in Kosovo and in Africa. And I don't know to explain it.
I think, like you said earlier, there's just a lot of selfish people
nowadays. Yeah,
and it's just selfishness.
It's so hard. It is hard for me.
It's a power.
Yeah, and then people are in groups, then you feel that they have. They collect a power. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, one skinhead you can confront, but
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I saw a large group of them in Prague, which I see back here.
I will show you.
They're very scary people.
They were going through the streets shouting all the slogans and nobody said a word. Mm-hmm. But then I wasn't saying a word. they were pretty tough.
She lives in Jerusalem. Between day and dark, girls' years in the ghetto. That is a story where my sister was in a camp, and when they were liberated, it's in German. So there are a lot of books, and I'm working on it to see if it can be translated into English.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked, by the way, I talked about my life. You know Jean Blanton?
Yes, I do.
He's a good friend of ours and his wife. And she interviewed me some last year because she wants to write for the congregation here, the history. And she interviewed me and she talked to me. And if you know, I asked her one time or him about, because I have not even read it. But okay. She wrote down.
Steve Whitney says, Dr. Whitney says, yeah. It's very well written. He was editing it for
me. Yeah, she came here several times and he talked about it. And now I hope in coming months, I will talk to her and sit down and write the history of things all together. But you know, it's a tough method to talk and write, and so my children and grandchildren will know more. I have a daughter who lives in Atlanta, and I have a son and grandson living here. And they may not be interested today, but later on they may be interested to read whatever happens.
I have a question, I guess it's
yeah.
going back
Go ahead.
To your story. I'm really curious about the idea of you on the road and disguising yourself, and you use the pronoun me, so you were with other people. I'm curious about two things.
I will tell you, yeah.
I'm curious that the idea of traveling with other people escaping, with trying to hide your identity, and also trying to... How did you know who you could trust, who you could not trust, who could you ask help from? I'm very curious about this.
I tell you, when I was in Holland, I saw some friends I could trust. Uh-huh. They went the same way from Holland to Spain. Mm-hmm. And their dad, they were young people too, like I. Their dad lived in Hornsville at that time. And he told me, and so I knew I could trust him. See? And then in France I met a fellow from Rotterdam who was in the same situation as I. So no wonder I could trust him, he could trust me. So we too escaped from France to Madrid. And then in Madrid, we went to England, and I went to the consul to Jamaica. So that's the only times. And when I was in Holland and went to from a little town in Enschede, which is on the German border, to Amsterdam, I had a friend in Holland, whom I could trust, who went with me to Amsterdam. And that's all, because the rest, I left them there. I didn't even tell them how or what, because I didn't know exactly how it would go, because you had to keep it very secret and be very careful. See, because later on, the same organization or the same two, three people knew this things, you couldn't trust them anymore. Mm-hmm. Because they were so hot on their ways, what they did, that they got scared. See, so you have that a lot too, that you trusted somebody and they didn't use the trust you gave to them, and they delivered the right in the hands of the case.
Oh,
okay.
So that happened to you?
That happened too.
That happened as well?
Yeah. So there with all, but I said I was looking. Mm-hmm. And I always say somebody had a hand. So that's how and how I'm still here today.
Yeah, we knew each other before the war, you know.
Did
you? And then
yeah.
All of a sudden we didn't see him anymore. So we thought he was there too. Till he came back in 46.
He came back to get you.
Yeah.
I even didn't know if she...
So if I was married or not.
She was not married.
I thought she was
married.
Okay.
And so on. So I didn't want to...
We were just friends, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you might have been sweethearts.
No.
We were ice skating all the time, you know.
I couldn't see in those years. The Germans already had influence in Holland, and they would.
Sure.
You were very careful with
whom
you get along with that.
Sure.
So
I had another friend, but in Dubis too. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to come at our house anymore. He was scared. He said, if you see me here, then he'd pick you all up too.
Oh.
Now, we are a big family. I'm one of six.
One of six.
You don't want to endanger your family.
No. No. So we had to be careful then already.
Yeah.
But when I came back, I saw her and I didn't say it, and then I met her brother a day later and he told me what, how and what and who. So then he said, come and visit us. And then I said, I like you.
That's all you need.
Yeah. And then I had to come here, and she had to wait over nearly 2 years.
Oh.
Yeah, because it took so long to get the papers in Spain.
Could write a book about it, Mom.
Yeah. How did you come here from Canada?
I applied. There aren't a lot of jobs in this.
You know, he is a Canadian doctor.
Dr. Sabo?
You know Dr. Sabo?
I know.
You heard about her name? She is office on
Leighton.
And she is from Alberta too.
Yeah,
really.
Is
from
Red Deer?
Yeah, around Red Deer.
Around
you know
there.
Red Deer?
Yes, okay.
She is around from there. Her parents still live there. So you're not the only Canadian.
I keep hearing rumors of others, but I haven't heard any of
this yet. Uh-huh. But she lives here already 3-4 years now. Huh? 4 years. Yeah. She applied here. Yeah, yeah, the doctor. So you're not the only. You like it here?
I've only been here 2 months.
Oh!
She hasn't had a chance to really.
But I do like it so far.
Uh-huh.
Wait till the summertime.
It's hot here. But
it's
if
hot.
She lives,
it's hot.
She lives on, she has an office on Leighton. And she is from Alberta too. And she's a very nice person.
Yeah.
What is her name?
Sabo.
Heather Sabo.
Oh.
So you cannot miss her. Where are you, before you came to Jackson, where did you live before?
I lived in Toronto.
Toronto? Oh yeah, on the other side.
Yeah, I went to school.
By the way, now let me ask you something.
Sure.
You think Quebec will become independent?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think so.
Yeah? I think that's all.
I don't want to see her.
Yeah.
I think we have to go home.
You think so?
They want me, the Federalist side wants my only vote.
Yeah, like the age.
6% in the last referendum. It's just a matter of time. They have so much propaganda constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very nationalistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
And you know who pushed that?
Sorry?
You know who pushed that? The gold. President de Gaulle, when he was in...
Oh, beat the Quebec League.
Yeah. He
yes.
was the one who pushed
that. He pushed it too far. Unfortunately. I feel certainly that this nationalism that's based in blood is so dangerous. And
mm-hmm.
in Canada, it's mild form because it's
yeah.
not violent, but it's still very prejudiced, really. They don't consider anybody Jewish or Greek or
no,
whatever.
No.
They don't consider them Quebecois, even though they might have lived there for longer.
That's very bad. You went ever to the northern part?
Not way up north.
No?
No. It's very expensive to get up there.
I know. I have a cousin of my father in 1895. He was with an exhibition in the north, in Baffin Island, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There. And he died there.
Oh.
United States had made an expedition. And some way went wrong, and they never got it. And somebody wrote a book.
Oh, a okay. band.
I don't know if you...
Oh, yes.
It's really exhibition.
That was quite wrong.
And later on, after this, they had a hearing in Washington, the same like they do today, and every senator and the army and the navy and the Air Force have to talk about it. And they never cleaned it really up. What happened because they didn't connect them at that time. Yeah. Information didn't go as fast as today.
Oh,
see,
of course.
It took months, and so that's why.
And that was your father's cousin?
That was a cousin of my father. They came to America in the 1880s. And he was a student at Ann Arbor and made it cum laude. You know,
oh, yeah.
And he was an astronomer and mathematician. That's why they took him.
I'm curious how you do. You ever have any read books or memoirs or seen movies, documentaries that people have done in the Second World War? Do you feel that the Second World War is being properly depicted, or that there do you get angry sometimes that they
no.
don't do it right?
It was. I will tell you. The movie, in much was much worse than the movie, because you see just what happened. You don't see how the people felt.
Are you thinking?
How they got hurt, how they had the strain they were under, the stress. Not only the people who lived there, but the people outside. Yeah. I saw the movies and see sometimes. And some of it comes out real good and some literally they can avoid in every detail. But the movies bring just back history, and literally they cannot bring everything. That don't bring your inner thoughts, what happened at that time, and how you feel, and the pressure, you know, you cannot bring that out always. She lives through the why in Holland. And that the bombs fell in their country too.
You were glad that the Tommies came. Oh no. Yeah, you know, you lived there now for 5 years, you know, then after a while, you really don't care anymore. You know, you have to go and then the Saudis go up, you have to go. You didn't want to go anymore either.
Yeah.
You should get so used to it for so long, you know, so.
Sure.
What's the use? But we were always glad when the angle, the Tommies came and went our city and go to Germany. Alhoewel, they bombed our several places too, you know, but they saw they were in Germany, just on the border.
Because it was just a couple of miles.
Right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, so, yeah.
2 kilometers, really. So, it's scary though. And I see the planes, when you shot at, you know, flying, and flames going over, and then you drop down somewhere. It's scary.
So, how did people manage to, both your experiences,
how do
you feel people were able
to keep it together,
that
you weren't
going to
crack under
the
strain?
They
just
had to.
Uh-huh.
You must have seen
people
who were able to.
Yeah, but still you had to eat. You had to drink. You had to sleep.
To eat.
Whatever was there was not much to eat, because people from other places came to the, from the big cities, came to this neighborhood to get some grain or some vegetables, potatoes, because the big cities didn't have nothing to eat.
No, but the farmers were mean to them, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because when the people went there, you know, my brother was just grown up. When the people went there for some to eat, some potatoes or whatever they had, you have to go in your linen closet and they wanted something for it. You know, they were mean to the farmer, a lot of them. You know, they're not honest.
There are always people, opportunists, who take the situation and see whatever they can make
out
of it. You know, it's the same like here.
It's everywhere.
My father, he went in after he joined the army after the Second World War, and went after it was over, and what he said, you know, after America occupied and everything, and he said that, you know, it was just terrible that, you know, the people would just take opportunities to take, and it's like that nowadays, you know, we take advantage of our poor here in America. We make them pay, you know, extreme amounts of money to live in a, you know, a hole, just so they'll have a shelter over their head, and it's sad. It's really sad. Did you feel, you said that you thought you had a hand over you?
Yeah.
So you must have took a lot of draws from your faith to, you think, to get you through?
Now I'm looking back. At that time I said, you know, when you are young, you can do everything.
Well, this is true. 20 years old, you were.
If you are 20 years old, you don't think what comes at you, you think you can make it.
Make it, yes, sir.
See, I was always an optimist, and I said, I can do it, and I try this, and I try that. So, and I was looking. See, because a lot of other people, they are not so lucky, because when I was in France, I heard horror stories of people who were not lucky, who ended up in prisons and so on and so on. See? So I really was lucky. The longer I am lucky, the more I see how lucky I am.
I imagine, I just trying to imagine that you were just
Yeah, you live from one day to the next to be secure. So that's what we try to do. So, Any more questions? Do you have a question? Yes, ask.
Well, you've really helped me, you know,
okay.
with that.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad I could do it, because this generation is less and less, and then they are
that's
no more.
That's what I told Professor Ostrey. Mm-hmm. My generation, we really, it's sad. We've seen that we don't care about our environment and we don't care about our history. I have friends that don't even know how their parents met. And I, you know, I'm thinking,
yeah.
You know, you don't know how your parents met, you don't know where you came from. You know, I couldn't imagine not wanting, I guess maybe my parents, and because I have older parents, my mother was like 38 when she had me. And maybe that helped instill in me something, but you know, I really think that people need to have that, because when you get older, like your age, and you have great grandchildren, you know, you want to share that with them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people my age are not going
to
have anything.
No, some are not interested at all to know that.
And I think that's so sad, because they're going to just cease to exist. And you know, who what did they accomplish? And who were they? You know, I guess I want more, you know.
Yeah, but I have to tell you one thing here. Mm-hmm. This territory, the South, is very much interested in their own history, because the Civil War, which is now over 134 years old, they still talk about it.